This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
I'm on the air with Sports Talk 870 AM. If you listened at 1 o'clock at the top of the hour, that was yesterday's intro to the show. No, we're not talking about the Spartans' loss to whoever it was. We're not going to talk about the Izzone on staying up all night. Tonight, today, Thursday, the day before the first Tigers exhibition game, we're going to talk about spring and baseball. Why not? It's cold in mid-Michigan. It's time to think warm weather and the sound of the crack of the bat. I think it was Ernie Harwell who always began the very first broadcast of his new season with the Sound of the Turtle poem or whatever it was that he read. And it couldn't be better to think thoughts of spring and baseball. Not cold in winter. You did, by the way, hear about the storm a moment ago if you were listening to NPR News, and that storm has canceled already tonight's Big Ten basketball game in Lincoln, Nebraska. The Cornhuskers were scheduled to host Iowa, and that game already yesterday was postponed until Saturday. So Iowa-Nebraska play Saturday, that's the men's side of things, in Lincoln because of the storm. Our phone number, and I'm going to put it out here now because we have about 5 to 10 minutes to maybe take a call or two before we go to our first guest, a scout for the Detroit Tigers. Our phone number is 355-9527. In outside the area code of 517, it's toll-free, 877-952-7870. Locally, 355-9527. Outside the area code, it's 877-952-7870. First of all, let's congratulate the Spartan women's basketball team. The 20th win of the season didn't come easy, and yet it was a victory, 54-45 over the Northwestern Wildcats. Coach Susie Merchant's team now has reached that magic 20-win mark, and more to come, but another, I guess you'd call it a landmark, a benchmark of 20 wins for the 10th year in a row here at Michigan State. Nice going. That's terrific. The men, they're getting set to go to Columbus, Ohio. They will leave on Saturday, play at 4 o'clock Sunday against the Buckeyes of Ohio State. Remember, the Spartans beat them here in East Lansing, and now they're going to try and do it on the road, 4 o'clock, CBS, Sunday, national audience again, and let's hope that they get a little better performance, and I'm sure they will. Coach Izzo will have them ready. Tomorrow, while we think of it, our last day of the week for us hosting in this hour, we're going to have a wide open range of topics. We're going to take your calls, talk a wild different bunch of things, including the great story about when Michigan State's basketball team went to Columbus, Ohio years ago and had their uniforms stolen the night before the game, and what happened. And all the background. We'll talk with a player or two that was there, and it's a crazy great story with the Spartans beating Ohio State wearing Ohio State jerseys. Maybe we should do that Sunday. Tom, I'll put that in the head of the basketball operations guy, KP, Kevin Pauga. Kevin, arrange for the uniforms to get stolen. Well. By the way, in case anybody wants to know, if you're going to Florida, and we'll be in Florida on May 17th. The Dick Vitale machine was handing out brochures the other night when the ESPN crew were in town. May 17th, 2013, they will have the 8th annual Dick Vitale Gala. And boy, this is a dandy. I mean, here are the guests that will be honored. Bobby Bowden from Florida State, Jim Calhoun, the former Connecticut Hall of Fame coach, and Bill Self, the current coach of Kansas. Coach Izzo was there a couple of years ago and honored by Dick Vitale, but he lives in the Sarasota area, and this is a beauty. If you want a ticket, there's only $1,000 per ticket. If you want to be an all-star, a Dickie V all-star, it's $5,000. If you want to be a friend of V, that's Jim Valvano, $12,500. If you want to be a gala patron, it costs you $20,000. Corporate sponsors start at $25,000. If you want to go to the reception at Dick Vitale's house, it's $35,000. If you want to go to the party after the gala, that's another $35,000. And if you want to be a presenting sponsor, it's $50,000. So in case you want to know, I'll give you the number. Alex, you don't have to write this down. I know you can't afford it. for Jimmy V or 919-380-9505. You can call here. We'll give you the number, the V Foundation. And, of course, it's for a great cause, the cancer research that Vital and Jim Valvano were so close to their heart. And it's fun. It's a beautiful, glossy color thing that the Vital folks put out there. And I just thought I'd throw it out because Coach Izzo was part of it a couple of years ago. But really what we want to talk about today is baseball. And later in the show, we're going to talk about jumping into an icy cold lake for charity. But that'll be later. Now let's talk warm thoughts. On the other end of our sports talk line is a guy that's been around the scouting profession of baseball for a long time, Clyde Weir. Clyde, welcome to the show. I got to punch him up, don't I? Well, that'd be silly. Clyde, are you there, buddy?
Hey, Terry. Nice to talk with you.
How many years has it been that you've been a scout for, let's say, professional baseball, let alone the Tigers?
This will be my 28th season as we get underway.
Wow. And you are heading down to Florida soon?
Yep, my bags are packed. I'm getting out of here over the weekend.
Attaboy. I talked to Dean Look today. He's on his way right now down to Florida, and we're going to have him on the air tomorrow to talk about baseball. But, Clyde, you're from the mid-Michigan area. Tell the folks about where you started playing ball and who were some of the coaches and mentors in your life.
Well, I started at Grand Ledge High School as a freshman, eighth grade freshman seasons, and was fortunate enough to play for the late Charlie Gorman, who was a tremendous baseball man as well as just a great all-around coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father was transferred to Owosso, and so I played over there for 10th, 11th grade baseball seasons, and my senior year in football, great coaches, played for Coach Allerton in baseball and Coach Gray in football. And so in the middle of my senior year, right after football, my dad comes home and says, "Hey, Clyde, guess what? We're going back to Grand Ledge." So I finished my senior year in 1968 back at Grand Ledge. And ironically, it was Pat O'Keefe's first season. And that evolved into a real long time friendship.
What a great history Grand Ledge has in baseball, starting with Charlie Gorman and then Pat O'Keefe. But when you were at Owosso, was Brad Van Pelt around at that time?
I think I remember him. Yeah.
How could you forget him?
I played with his older brother in baseball, Robin, and then Brad was the year behind me. And Wassel, at that time, we had a real good run in football. And I used to kid Brad. He was, like I say, the year behind me. And I moved from quarterback to wide receiver as a senior. Brad was our quarterback, and we had a nice year together. And I used to kid him as time went on, and he had such an unbelievable career. And I would see him on occasion. I'd say, "Hey, you know, Bradley, I think you and I were probably the best passing combination in Owosso history." And he would immediately say I was half right.
Yeah, but there are very few athletes, even to come through Michigan State, that could compete and win a varsity letter in three sports. You know, we've had a few like Bob Carey and Kirk Gibson, but as far as a three-sport all-star, I think Brad won eight letters at Michigan State. He lettered in basketball, baseball, and football. Of course, went on to a 14-year career in the NFL and is in the New York Giants Hall of Fame. But, Clyde, as you look back and you think back, and, of course, it was so tragic to lose Brad so early at age 57, have there been many athletes you've ever seen that were so talented?
Well, he's certainly in a special class. When you talk about, you know, the versatility to be so skilled in all three sports. So he was a real, like you say, special person, and we obviously lost him way too young.
Did he make the right decision, though? Do you think, even looking back at 14 years in the NFL, what would his baseball career have been like?
Oh, he would have been a major league player, of course, and probably, you know, it's hard to say for sure. But personally, I think, Terry, he made the right choice because he was. You know, he was such a great football player. But as far as making the choice to baseball, I had a friend of mine who was a scout at the time when Brad was in high school. And he said that Brad was the only pitcher that he ever, when he went to scout him, literally heard the ball sing when he pitched it. That, and I, you know, you hear that old saying, you know, with guys that have big time velocity, and he said that when Brad pitched, the ball literally made a sound because of the force of his fastball, and I thought that was pretty unique.
Did they have a gun back then, Clyde? Were they putting a gun on his?
No, not that I recall. Not in high school.
Yeah.
I know Coach Littweiler started that at MSU, but I don't remember the guns in the late 60s, early 70s.
Too bad.
Yeah, and back then, you know, I used to ask the scouts when I first got into the game, I said, how did you judge pitchers without radar guns? And they really went by strikeouts, and it's still, if you think about it, holds true today. The guys that are the, you know, the guys like Verlander and the guys with the plus-plus fastballs, they register all the strikeouts, and so back then, without the gun, and I'm going to guess, you know, Brad probably threw in that mid-90s range, maybe a little harder, in those kind of guys.
And he could hit, too, by the way. Probably should have gone to the National League. He'd have been an outstanding hitter.
Yeah, he was just a good athlete, and there was a good group around here back in the late 60s, and he, you know, with Dave Leisman over at Waverly, and on it goes.
Sure. Let's go, Clyde, let's go over to your first job in the major leagues as a scout. It wasn't with Detroit, and why?
Well, I had been scouted by Bill LaJoie.
A player?
Yes.
You were a pitcher and a first baseman?
Left-handed pitcher, mainly, and I also played first. So when I followed Mr. LaJoie's career, and he went up the ladder with the Tigers, and when I got done playing baseball and softball and still wanted to stay in the game, I reached out to him, and fortunately, he remembered me. But the Tigers didn't have any openings, and so he was kind enough to let me use him as a reference. And I was a little creative, and I thought, okay, who needs scouting help? And I selected the Cleveland Indians.
Why?
So I wrote them a letter.
Yeah. Why'd you say they needed help?
Well, back in the...
they were the worst team?
In the mid-80s, they were struggling.
Okay.
And so I was able to scouting, and I tell young guys that approach me now, it's a very, very tough brotherhood to join.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough to get in. Mm-hmm. But I got a job as a bird dog, which is a non-paid, just go out, watch games, and if you like somebody, let us know. And fortunately, I had written the Tigers numerous letters, and I had been very persistent when I was moving around, but nothing came up. So while I was with the Indians, Rick Schmidt was the assistant coach over there helping at Waverly. And he called me in the mid-80s and said, hey, Clyde, you need to come over and see our pitcher, John Schmoltz.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over to see John. I was living in Detroit area. And it was during those scouting trips that I got reacquainted with some of the scouts and met some of the Detroit Tiger scouts. And I think looking back, they probably wondered, what is this guy doing here? Who is this guy? We don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story longer, they had had an opening in the fall of 85, and so they called me, and ironically, that is when John, you know, gave up the opportunity to go to state and signed with the Tigers, and so I always kid John that we signed at the same time.
Well,
he really helped me get noticed, if you will, by the Tigers, and that would have been the fall of 85, and that's what started my long run with them.
Well, of course, John was most recently recognized by Michigan State Baseball and honored as the featured speaker for Michigan State when Jake Boss had his first pitch dinner, and I have emceed that for a number of years. It was like February 2nd, and Tommy Usick was the former Spartan who they honored as a distinguished alumnus. We've had Robin Roberts, Kirk Gibson, Earl Morrill. But that's when you and I got reacquainted, and Smoltz was there. And I thought the interesting question, and we'll go back and talk about John in a moment or two, but I think one of the fans in the audience asked, who do you look to as you think the best pitcher in Major League Baseball? And I was hoping for the answer that I got, right, Clyde? And that was...
Verlander,
no question. He says because of the intensity, his focus, and all the other things that he does, and he gets his arm is so rare that it gets stronger as the game goes on. But anyway, we'll go back and talk about Smoltz and a whole lot more. I even remember, Clyde, I go back to when Hoot Evers was not only a good player for the Tigers, but then became an outstanding scout.
Yes.
Right? And I don't even know, before we take a break, how many scouts do the Detroit Tigers have? How many total?
There's 25 of us, but if you count our front office staff, it's close to 30.
I'm surprised. I would have even guessed more than that. But yeah. All right, we're going to get into that and spring training and what the Tigers, we look for as we try to get a world championship in Detroit. We have to take a break. And Clyde, can you stay with us a couple more minutes?
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, Clyde Weir on the line from the Detroit Tigers, Major League Scout, and we'll ask you, our listeners, stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
There's heated debate over exempting birth control from health coverage. The issue may even reach the Supreme Court. But this is hardly the only such exemption that's been hammered out in the U.S. I'm Jennifer Ludden. From vaccines to school attendance to photo IDs, who gets a religious exemption and why? Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather. Our high 25. It'll be mostly cloudy today. There's a good chance of snow tonight, the low in the upper teens. For Friday, an inch or less of snow with freezing drizzle and rain and a high of 31. Saturday's high 31 again, cloudy with some snow Saturday.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Terry Braverman, sitting in Earl Robinson's chair for the next day and a half. We're talking with a Detroit Tigers scout, and we're talking baseball today on a cold Michigan day with Clyde Weir, a scout who lives in the mid-Michigan area. Clyde, I want to ask, because Moneyball was so popular recently, the story of Billy Beane and Brad Pitt, of course, playing that role. I thought there was a scene in there that scouts would either wince at or agree with, but you remember when they were all sitting around and he introduced this young sort of baseball statistical nerd and said, this is the guy we're going to depend on to who we draft or trade for, and all these old grizzled scouts are looking at him like, we know baseball, we know players, we know this and that, and he doesn't. That was kind of an interesting scene. And I don't know how realistic it was, but Billy Beane did sort of change the atmosphere and culture, didn't he?
Yes, there's no question, Terry, that it changed the platform, if you will, of how involved are you going to become with stats versus seeing the player, you know, live with your scout's eye and his intuition. So there was a strong. Sentiments both ways.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that? You're a scout, so I know where you stand. But well, you know, use stats, too. You use statistics.
Oh, yes. Like we were talking earlier, Terry, about strikeouts. And that was back in the 60s. And you always look at hits to innings pitched. So stats have always been a part of the equation. And this certainly pushed it forward, and why not, when
sure.
You look at the technology we have. But one thing I found interesting about that movie, if you the one scout that was the most challenging, if you will, is now back with Oakland, and his name's Grady Fusion. They brought him back because
he
was the brainchild of the early 90s when Oakland was so good. And matter of fact, it hits home with Michigan State because one of their front of the rotation guys was Mark Mulder.
Yep.
And they drafted Mark out of Michigan State as well as Tim Hudson and some other very fine arms. And that club was successful because some scouts did some tremendous work in the field. So I thought it was interesting to see Moneyball. And to answer your question also, Terry, it was a little bit dramatized because it's a movie.
Of course, it's Hollywood. Let's go to a young gun that had a real tough choice to make this past year, right from Holt, Michigan, as Justin Allman, the great hardball thrower who was balancing going professionally or signing with Michigan State. He ended up signing with Michigan State, and I know Jake Boss is looking for big things from him. Did you see him, Allman, play much in high school, and what's your evaluation?
I saw Justin a lot. Being a local guy here, I had the benefit of seeing him play many games at Holt and also in the summer, and his future is very bright. He's number one, he's a great kid from a very, very nice family, and we got to know him very well. Mm-hmm. His parents and I are still very good friends, and now that he's at State, we'll continue to monitor his progress.
So he's on the Tigers' radar?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a silly statement to make.
Yeah, he is, and we wish him the best. And we've tried throughout the state, Terry, to work closely with the colleges because we all have the same the same goal, and that's what's best for the young player.
You know, recently I had the pleasure of playing down in Florida with a Tiger scout by accident, who's a Michigan State alum, and he was telling me the culture down in Florida is such now. Years ago, when I was more active in the sport world, players who wanted to go professionally would go to a ballpark in the summer, and you'd have a call. The Tigers would say, okay, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on August 5th, anybody wants to try out? And you know, 50, 60 guys would come. And it's probably been that way forever. But the scout in Florida told me that at the University of Florida in Gainesville, there are two major league teams that have an office that they can occupy on the campus, and players who are prospects can come to the campus of the University of Florida and try out right on the Gainesville, on the Gators baseball field, which I found almost like, isn't this an NCAA violation? And when I asked Jake Boss about it, he said, well, you know, it's a gray area, and they do a lot of things that we haven't made a decision on. But boy, what an advantage. If Florida says, can we just go watch this kid work out? And if the Reds or the Mets don't want him, hey, how about a college scholarship?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm going to have to see if Jake will get me an office in
I knew you'd say that.
but Jake is right, Terry. It is somewhat of a gray area and certainly more of an issue for the college side of that piece because of the NCAA, where professionally, you know, we probably have a little more free reign, and we still to this day have tryout camps every year.
You know, I want to tell you a quick story, an old time story, and then we're going to get to the Tigers of today. But when they had the funeral and the visitation for my good buddy Jim Adams, who of course should be familiar with
I grew up listening to you two.
Yeah, Jim and I shared an office for 10 years and worked, of course, here at WKAR for years. At the funeral home the day before the funeral, I talked with his brother-in-law, Al Dykema, and Al told me an interesting story. He said, and he and I went to the same high school at Muskegon, and Al was a teammate on the baseball team of Earl Morrill, who, of course, we know from football fame. But Earl was also an outstanding baseball player, shortstop, third baseman, both in high school and at Michigan State when they won the Big Ten Championship 1954. But Earl and about six players from the Muskegon team went to Detroit for a tryout at the old Briggs Stadium. And Al said, when we walked in, I was with Earl and four other guys, there were like 150, 160 young men, 18 years old, 17, all so excited and eager. All we brought was our spikes and our glove. We're going to try out for the Detroit Tigers. And here we are at a major league ballpark. We're all getting dressed. We're getting our cleats on. I go out on the field, and I look, and there's Earl sitting in the stands all by himself. So Al said, I walk over, and I said, Earl, come on, get your shoes on. Let's go. Let's go. We're going to work out. And he goes, I can't. He said, why not? He said, I just found out if I go on that field and try out for a Major League Baseball team, I lose my scholarship in football at Michigan State.
Wow.
The rules in those days, that's the 50s, were if you had anything to do with a professional team, football or basketball, baseball, you were ineligible, immediately declared, suspended, disqualified, no scholarship. And he just found out minutes before he almost made a crucial, somebody would have called him on it. said, hey, you can't play in college. You tried out for the Detroit Tigers.
Boy, I'm glad he found that out.
Isn't that something? How history would have been changed?
Yes, what a career he had.
Yeah. Okay, now, Clyde Weir, the Detroit Tigers open up tomorrow. They are the defending American League champions. It seems they have bolstered their club with the roster, with the addition of Torii Hunter and the reactivation of Victor Martinez. We've lost Delmon Young, but even so, I mean, with if the pitching comes around, this looks like another exciting year.
Well, it certainly does, Terry, and you know all the people supposedly that do the picking of where clubs are going to finish have us rated very highly, and that raises the bar of expectations. But I'm sure that you know Jim Leland and his staff are trying to keep this team focused on, you know, like you say, starting spring training.
Mm-hmm.
We got to win as the season starts every series and not get ahead of ourselves. It was tremendous going to the World Series last year, but we need to you know stay focused. And we do have a solid club, and if our stars, if you will, the Verlanders and the Cabreras and Prince Fielder, if they just play and be who they are, and some of our other players maybe have breakout seasons or. Results a little higher than what we expect. Those are usually the clubs that you see in the World Series and get it done. You need a lot of things to fall for you. I have found out.
Sure.
Who's the healthiest? It is so hard to get to the World Series.
And just like the Super Bowl, sometimes the team that wins isn't the best, but the healthiest. Let's go to the pressure that must be on a 22-year-old who's never pitched a major league, hasn't thrown a pitch, Bruce Rondon. How about this guy? 22 years old. And already the phenom, a lot of pressure on that young guy.
Well, there is, Terry, if it's not handled properly, and I know our staff is going to take and be very methodical in bringing him along. He does have a tremendous arm. I've scouted him and seen him literally sit at, you try not to fall in love with radar gun readings, but this guy is sitting at, 199 consistently. So he's got a, certainly a great fastball. He's got a great slider. So
where did he play last year?
He ended up at Double-A. He started out at, he went through our whole system rather quickly. I saw him at West Michigan, and he's a fast mover, so he's bounced around. And so you're correct that it would be a big jump for him to make.
You mean he played for the Whitecaps?
He did a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
And then he moved up through our system, through high A ball, and then through Double A, and briefly at Triple A, and then he pitched in the Arizona Fall League last fall.
How big is he, Clyde?
He's about 6'3", 230. He's a big guy, and he's not the kind of guy that is very violent with his delivery. I mean, he's pretty smooth and fluid, and he also, like I say, has the mentality to be a closer. But with that said, we've got a pretty deep bullpen, and we have to, we can go with Coke and Benoit and keep the pressure off of him and not have him, feel that weight, if you will, without taking and systematically having him climb the ladder.
Where'd Rondon grow up?
He was from Venezuela.
Venezuela, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a special talent. There's no doubt.
Avisail Garcia, Miguel Cabrera, and now Rondon from Venezuela. He's got his buddies on the team. It should be fun to watch. And who scouted him? Who discovered him?
That would have been one of our guys over there that handles that area.
So you don't send anybody from this country. You have a permanent scout in Venezuela?
We very rarely will one scout, especially with a high profile guy, sign a player, because we have levels of the organization with what we have, cross checkers and national cross checkers.
Boy.
So in most cases, there's going to be two or three sets of eyes that locate a guy and start that process.
Is being a professional scout for baseball a full-time job?
It is for some people, depending on the states you have and the size of your territory. I've bounced between the both myself. If sometimes they'll give you Ohio, Michigan, Indiana. Right now, for me personally, I stay in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So even though you start the season in March and you go right through the season, I call it a seasonal employee. So it's like saying you're running a golf course. Oh,
sure.
It's part time.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you're not
you
playing baseball in February in Michigan.
But it is a good question, Terry, because we have scouts that have multiple states,
okay,
and then they will depend on someone like myself as a local area scout to cover the state of Michigan. Mark Monahan and I are the only two guys in Michigan, if you will, and then we see players, we report them up. Garrett Guest would be who I report to out of Chicago, and then he will come in, and then, just like we were talking about Justin Allman last year, I wrote the initial report. Garrett came in and saw him, liked him. Then Tom Osowski, our regional cross-checker, came in. So Justin was a prime example of three different scouts from the Tigers evaluated him. And this is the way all clubs do it now. The money invested in these young players, you wanna get it right.
How about not only the money invested, how about the money the players are earning?
Yeah.
Look, on the other side of it. But, Clyde, let me go back. Let's go back now. I'm full of questions. Beginning with college players supplied to Major League Baseball. I don't mean Detroit necessarily, but in all Major League Baseball, what percent would you say, guess if you have to, had some experience playing college baseball?
Oh, I would say that's probably 60% at least.
Really? Oh, that's high. I thought it would have been much lower.
Yeah. It's changed dramatically over the years because when I first started scouting and as a player as well, you saw more players going, into pro ball rather than going to school.
Like John Smoltz.
Exactly.
Good example. All right.
And that has changed, and again, you're right, Terry. I am ballparking that without looking
that's okay.
it up.
But all right, now let's go back to the state of Michigan, since we're on National Public Radio here in mid-Michigan. How many players in the major leagues came from the state of Michigan? There's one you haven't gotten in your book. How many ballplayers in the major leagues now are from Michigan?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one off the top
of my John head. Smoltz was up until he retired.
Right, right. I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
Barry Larkin retired, and he played at Michigan. I don't know that he is from the state of Michigan.
Right, and that's why, that number is probably quite surprising.
Small?
Yes.
You think? Yeah, I think so. We're not a hotbed of baseball.
No.
What would you say is number one? California, Texas, Florida?
Yeah, I would say Texas, California, Florida, in
just like
order.
Football. Looks
yep.
Just like football. The warmer weather, year-round places to play.
Yes, and it's to their benefit, and they start that when they're in Little League, and it works right up through high school and in college. They just have so much opportunity for development.
How early, I know this is a strange question for you, Clyde Weir, but how early can you see the potential of a future major leaguer? At what age? I mean, are we talking Little League?
I would say it's high school.
High school.
Yeah, when they start playing, probably maybe their sophomore year. Sometimes you might see it as a freshman, but and that's why it's so critical for the young guys to play summer baseball, because our high school season is somewhat restricted for length of time due to weather. So, they really mature at a different level. But I would say 9th, 10th grade.
Okay. Did you ever read our Pete Gents' book, The Last Magic Summer, My Last Magic Summer?
You know what? I was a Pete Gents fan, and I don't think I did.
Oh, you've got to read it.
Okay.
Because after he retired from the NFL, after he wrote North Dallas 40, after he did all the things in the journalism world, he kind of retired in seclusion in Bangor, Michigan, and his son Carter was like a senior in high school, and before he went to college, he said, "Dad, I got this summer league baseball team. We got some, guys that are pretty good athletes, and we need a coach." And Pete said, "No. I don't want to get into the hassle of parents and coaches and all that." And they couldn't find anybody. So reluctantly, this former NFL player, this former Big Ten basketball star, coached his son's summer team. And got so involved from not having any interest, got them all the way to the state championship game in Michigan, where they played Kalamazoo, where Derek Jeter played.
There's your top Michigan guy in the big leagues right now.
Yeah, there. Oh, we forgot about Derek Jeter.
Yeah,
38 Dwayne years Bilo, old, going strong.
Yeah, and Dwayne Bielo, not to go back to that,
Bilo.
Dwayne Bielo is on our big league club, is from Michigan.
Where's he from?
So he's from Britain, which is down by Adrian, and he went to junior college at Lake Michigan, and we signed him a few years ago.
I didn't know that.
And Jeter was just had a great – that's one of the things, Terry, that's so nice about this job, is getting to meet these young guys. And even if they're not in the Tiger system, to follow their careers and watch them develop, it's quite gratifying.
Is it possible for you to even talk about who is on your radar now, or is that not permissible?
Well, some of the guys, that we'll see, Michigan State, of course, and Andrew Wozniak's got a nice arm over there that he'll be their Friday guy, and David Garner is a young man that throws well. So
three guys went early this last year from Jake's team.
Right, right. And also, just so your listeners know, Jeff Holm is still in our system, a Michigan State player from a few years back. And also, if the name Bruce Fields rings a bell from Lansing Everett, his son Daniel is in our system and doing a fine
job. Wasn't
he
a hitting instructor at one point for Detroit?
And he is back. Bruce had went with the Cleveland Indians for a number of years, and they made some changes. So Bruce is back as our minor league hitting instructor.
Good. Didn't he play with Magic at Everett?
Yes. Yeah. He was on that team with Magic. Yep.
Oh, gosh. My memory hasn't gone completely.
Yeah. And then Jonathan Roof is another player played at State a few years ago, and he has signed with us as a free agent. So he's in our minor league camp, too.
Beautiful.
So,
well, Clyde, I could talk baseball on and on and on, and I know you could too. You've got other things to do. You're heading south. I assume you're going to go to Joker Marchant and catch a few games.
Yeah. I'll see a few there for sure.
All right. The home of the Lakeland Flying Tigers.
Yes, and hopefully, Terry, we'll talk and celebrate this season. It's exciting that in the community we've got the Tigers competing at a high level, and that makes baseball fun.
Well, I'm going to catch up with you down there, Clyde, but I want to thank you so much for coming on the air with us and talking baseball in this cold winter day, and best of luck to you, and even best of luck to Jim Leland and the Tigers this year. Let's get it all, huh?
Okay, well, thank you for having me on, Terry.
My pleasure. Clyde Weir, scout for the Detroit Tigers. We're going to come right back in just a moment. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
Resuscitation medicine is bringing some people back from the dead after their heart has stopped. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Dr. Sam Parnia, who directs resuscitation medicine at the Stony Brook University School of Medicine, and is researching what people experience in that period after their heart has stopped before they're resuscitated, what's often called near-death experiences. Join us.
Today will be mostly cloudy and our high will be 25 degrees. A good chance of overnight snow with a low of 17. An inch or less of new snow tomorrow. Some freezing drizzle and rain with a high in the low 30s, and cloudy with snow and a high in the low 30s Saturday. This is Scott Pohl. Thanks for joining us.
And this is Terry Braverman talking sports here on 870 AM. Our phone number, and you can call in the next 15 minutes, 355-9527. Toll free, it's 877-952-7870. Right now, we're going to talk about another group of athletes that don't always get the national publicity or attention. And nevertheless, they're a very special group. In fact, they're called Special Olympians. On the line right now is one of the directors of the program for Mid-Michigan, and maybe for the state of Michigan. I don't know. Ann Gowdy. Ann, give us your correct title. Are you there? Let me push this button. Hi.
Well, this weekend on Sunday, we're all going to be out at Eagle Eye for our 9th annual Polar Plunge. And so far today, we have 370 plungers signed up, so we're really excited.
Wow. I have missed your title again, Ann. Give it to me once again.
It's Director of Special Olympics Michigan for Ingham and Eaton County.
Okay, for the two counties. 370 plungers, and the each one of them has to pay an entry fee, right? What is that fee? And
correct. The plungers, it's a minimum entry fee of $75 per plunger. And then the more money they raise, the more incentives we have. We have prizes for most money raised, and we also have prizes for the best costumes.
Oh, I know, and I've worked almost every one of them, man. It's more fun and gratifying in so many ways on so many different levels. What do you expect as the income when you're all bottom line from the Polar Plunge this year?
Well, we're hoping. Last year we raised approximately $75,000, and we had about 350
wow.
plungers. So we're expecting this year to increase our plungers by about 50 more people. So we're hoping also that the income will be a little bit above $75,000 this year. And something new and exciting that we're doing this year, we're offering VIP seating, because we do encourage people to come on out and watch. It's
what
a
good idea. VIP seating. I got to believe that Don Loading had something to do with that.
Just a little bit. And our
a ticket manager.
University are loaning us some bleachers for
yeah,
the day.
Yeah.
And we're going to put those up. And for $20, you can get VIP seating with unlimited coffee and hot chocolate from our friends at Tim Hortons.
Oh, what
and
about
warm?
Oh, wait, did you get bench warmers? Does the seat on the bleacher have a bench warmer? Has Loading figured that out?
I bring that.
All right.
You probably should bring that with you, but you also get into the post-plunge party as well. So we're hoping that way, too, we'll get more of our spectators engaged and,
Oh, it's a video opportunity. It to me, and the jumpers and the reactions, it's priceless. Some of the looks on the people when they come out of the water, and I don't mean to make fun of them. God bless them. Better them than me. I mean, it's cold. And a lot of your Special Olympians themselves jump, do they not?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. We have Special Olympics athletes. And as a matter of fact, one of our biggest groups is from Hartwood School out in Mason. And they have a large plunge team made up of family members and athletes every year.
Would you say that Lansing and the Mid-Michigan area, Ingham County, Eaton, as you said, is it the biggest fundraiser Polar Plunge in the state of Michigan?
We are definitely up in the top two. Another great big one that they do, too, is down in Detroit. However, we are one of the older plunges. A lot of the other plunges are newer. Like I said, this is our ninth year, and we're so excited to be back at Eagle Eye.
All right. And, again, let's tell them Eagle Eye, and what time will the first plunger take the plunge?
We'll start taking registration at 11:30. At Eagle Eye, and the parade of costumes and the plunge will begin at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, okay.
And then immediately following the last plunger, the awards and the post plunge party will start inside.
And we should tell the folks that it doesn't cost anything to come and watch.
Oh, there's no entry fee. Again, it's just a fun event,
sure.
A good day, and it looks like the weather is going to cooperate for us.
What does good weather mean to a polar plunge? Like in the 20s?
Well, actually, they're saying it could be 34 and
partly
sunny,
perfect.
So we're excited.
Oh, perfect. I'm sure the plungers are excited, too. They're a lot
the
more excited.
The water is so cold.
When they come out of the water, they're a lot more excited than when they go in, before they go in. I love it. And God bless you and all your staff and your volunteers. You couldn't do it. How many volunteers for that event?
Oh, we've probably got about 75 to 100 volunteers that are going to be coming out and helping us because we're actually going out and starting to cut the hole today and get our bearings on where we're going to be, jumping from today. So it takes us 2 or 3 days to get ready. But, and then the dive team from the Eaton and Ingham County Sheriffs, who are the ones who sit in the water for a couple hours and make sure that all our jumpers are safe.
Bless them.
They do an awesome job.
And Gowdy, say hello to Val for me and Don Loading. I'll see you Sunday. Polar Plunge, 1 o'clock or earlier, Eagle Eye. And best of luck to all the plungers for the 9th annual Polar Plunge. Thanks for coming on, Ann.
All right. Thanks, Terry. See you
Sunday. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's go to the phones. I don't get to do this a lot, so here it is late on a Thursday afternoon. Let's go to Los Angeles, believe it or not. And Paul is on the line. Paul, welcome to the Sports Talk 870.
Terry, Paul Eisenfeld, how are you?
Paul Eisenfeld, wow.
Wow, indeed. I'm still alive.
What are you doing, Paul?
Well, I'm doing two things. In my spare time, I'm writing novels. and I work for an organization that does classical music concerts in schools.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Can you give us the name of one of the novels you've written, if we can purchase one? Or what?
Sure. The one that I did last year was called Malibu Confidential.
Hmm.
And the one that's coming out in the next month or two will be called The Mysterious Night.
Sounds like you're following in the footsteps of our old buddy Jim Cash.
Yeah, kind of. Although he was a little bit ahead of me.
Paul, what was your last year at Michigan State?
1970, I believe.
What are your great memories of Spartan athletics from 67 to 70?
Well, you know, I was in East Lansing working until 76.
Okay.
So it goes a lot more. I'll tell you, the one thing that I always think about is that that overtime game against Wisconsin in hockey, where it went through three overtimes, and in the fourth overtime, we lost on a fluke goal, and the players were out there, and they were scrambling for hours.
I think it was Minnesota, Paul.
Was it Minnesota?
Yeah,
okay,
I don't want to. I'm fuzzy, but I think it was Minnesota. Yeah, you're right. Four overtimes, and it was a playoff game to decide who would go to the next round.
That's right. And I'm sitting next to Bob Kurtz, who's calling the game on WKAR.
Oh, man.
And God, he was astonishing. He never lost his enthusiasm hour after hour.
Well, that was like I went to Lake Placid when Bowling Green played somebody into five overtimes for the NCAA title.
Yeah.
And by the end of the game, the crowd was yelling, "Somebody score! Anybody score!" The Maroon Loon, I think, finally just had it. The mascot couldn't last five overtimes. But, Paul, how great to hear from a Spartan in L.A. where they have a very active and vibrant alumni club, as I recall.
Them, actually. We've got a branch here in Los Angeles, and we have a branch down in Orange County.
Uh-huh.
And the L.A. group, we get together for every football game. Mm-hmm. Basketball is kind of problematic because, you know, when you start a game at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, people are still working.
That's true. Yeah. Well, we appreciate the support coming from the left coast, and we want you to keep flying that green and white banner out there. It's good to hear from you, buddy.
Well, thank you, Terry. It's great to hear you on the radio.
Thanks. I'm going to go buy a Malibu Confidential right now.
Well, thank you very much.
See you later, buddy.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Let's go to the phones and Randy on line two. Randy, welcome to Sports Talk 870.
Hello, Terry.
Hi.
I'm about 100 miles south of your last caller and about three years behind him at Michigan State. Randy Kilpatrick, I'm bring up the other spring sport, track and field. And we have a couple people that are possibly up for nomination. Their name's on the MSU Hall of Fame, and a couple teammates of mine, well, one teammate, Ken Popejoy, ran in 73. And we, talking to another teammate, Bill Werwine, one of the best 400-meter runners, 440 back in that day, we were discussing that his name is, he's not in the Hall of Fame. First sub-4-minute miler. And
you mean Ken?
Ken Popejoy.
Yeah, I sure.
And he still has the world, the Big Ten meet record of 3:59. And we're track and field is you know, the women have done great at Michigan State. They won the Big Ten cross country this year. And the men haven't had a legacy since the 70s. We're hoping Ken gets on the list. Another friend of mine, actually, Warren Dretzler, surprisingly, the last Olympian.
From
LaGrange, Illinois. And NCAA champ, also a 1952 U.S. Olympic team.
So, you know, Randy, where are you? Tell me again, you said 100 miles south of L.A. Where is that?
Oh, I'm in San Diego.
San Diego, okay. Were you there when we played on the aircraft carrier?
I was. I couldn't make that game. Yeah. I wish I would have. I'm sure you were down there.
I was there. It was one of the highlights of all time.
It was special.
How about, is there an active Spartan club? I think there is in San Diego area.
There is. There's a pretty good group. We used to meet at Longboards, and they just are remodeling that. But in Pacific Beach, we watch the basketball games and, of course, football. It's a pretty active group.
Randy, you're not talking about a sport that I am totally unfamiliar with. You know, for a while, I used to announce the outdoor track and field meets, and occasionally indoors at Jennison Fieldhouse. Coach Gibbard talked me into doing the PA. But as I recall, the first time the Spartan track and field team hit the big time was when Jim Ryan came to run after he'd won the Olympics and had just got on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I think you ran for Kansas, right?
Yes, he did.
Were you around at that time?
He's about 4 years ahead of my time.
Okay.
But I was looking at results, and yeah, didn't he run a 4:07 indoors at?
I don't go there. I don't remember the times. But I remember Jim Gibbard was so proud and so happy that he had Ryan, because that was PR. That was pure public relations for Spartan Track and Field. And of course, Bill Werwan, I still see him every football game. He's around the stadium and always saying hello. And, of course, Herb Washington and Marshall Dill and those days. But I want to tell you the process, Randy, real quickly, because we haven't got much time. John Lewandowski is the sports information director and I think is the chair of the Hall of Fame committee. So go online,
okay.
Talk to Louie. It's L-E-W-I-E, we call him Louie, John Lewandowski, in sports information, and say you want to enter Ken Popejoy's name or Bill Werwan, either one or both, and I would agree with both of them, and then see what, get in the process, get their application in, and go from there, will you?
Fantastic. And, and any opinions on how to get track and field going again at Michigan State since the women are, should we piggyback off the women's success?
I don't have an opinion on that, no. I would just say the more alums get involved, like you, the more they're going to appreciate it. Oh, I don't mean to say just with a contribution financially, but I mean any way you can in terms of recruiting, in terms of spreading the word about the program, if we need to upgrade any facilities, I don't know that. All I know is I love the sport, and you do too. What was your specialty?
I was the two-mile indoor. I broke the school record back in 72. I had the school indoor two-mile record at 8:50. And then, of course, Ken, we did the four-by-one. We had the best time in the nation and actually beat Jim Ryan's four-by-one on the four-times one-mile relay at Drake Relays.
Wow.
We were ranked number one with the Cool Brothers, Ron and Rob Cool, me and Ken Popejoy anchored it and beat Dave Waddle, who went on to
make the Are you running marathons these days or triathletes?
I've run my six. No, 26 miles is too far. But Doug Curtis is the hero in Michigan for running marathons now.
I'm going to put a plug in for our oldest son. He runs the special events at Disney in Orlando. They can run a half marathon. The best place in the world to run a marathon is on the Disney property.
I was there.
Really?
I was there with a friend, the 13, the half marathon.
Yeah, right.
And your son's
Doug Morris is our son. Our oldest son does all the sound, sets up the whole thing. He says it's an unbelievable 13. I don't know how many thousand
13.1, very well organized.
Yeah,
Gary.
Yeah, and great music. Right? You can't. Yeah. It's the happiest place in the world.
It was fantastic. They did a great job.
Randy, thanks so much for calling in all the way from San Diego. Randy Kilpatrick.
Nice to speak to you. Appreciate
Thank you so much, Randy. And we'll put a word in for Popejoy.
All right. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thanks. Bye.
How about that? Two calls, Alex, and they're both from California. I guess God bless the Internet. We have one more day to do this thing on 870 AM tomorrow from 105 until 2 o'clock. We hope that you will join us. I'm Terry Braverman. We're gonna let any and every subject come up tomorrow. We're going to have a great time, but we have one story, one baseball story. Dean Look is going to tell us about Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris. I whet your appetite for that. I hope you'll join us. Thanks for joining us here on 870. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Terry Braverman.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.